Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On we go with more music to set the mood.
Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond. Fine light in the beautiful sea. I chose to be happy. You and I, you and I. We're like diamonds in the sky. You're a shooting star I see. A vision of ecstasy. When you hold me, I'm alive.
You're listening to Diamonds by Rihanna, and its lyrics are a perfect seg to our next guest and her passion project. Daniel Smith is the author of the upcoming book, Shine Bright, a very personal history of Black women in pop. You know, shine bright like a diamond. Smith's also the host of the Spotify podcast, Black Girl Songbook, and former editor-in-chief of Vibe. She's taken years to write a book that highlights the contributions of early girl groups like the Dixie Cups and trailblazers like Dionne Warwick to modern-day pop icons Mariah Carey, Beyoncé, and, of course, Rihanna. But as the subtitle of the book suggests, Smith gets intimate in this story, sharing stories from her childhood growing up in a house with her mother's abusive boyfriend. Great music provided an escape. Black women pop stars provided inspiration. Smith writes in her book that just talking about Black women music still makes her emotional. Quote, I weep because I want Black women who create music to be known and understood as I want to be known and understood. So we're going to continue our Women in Music Monday celebration, talking about some of the Black women who have left their mark on the music industry. Shine Bright, a very personal history of Black women in pop, will be out April 19th. And Daniel Smith joins me now. Hi. Ooh, wait, I don't hear.
Am I on mute?
You're no longer on mute.
Oh, good, good. How are you doing?
I am so good. I'm so great. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm super excited to be here.
What did you, when you first sat down to write this book, what was your goal? And then how did it change over the course of writing it?
Well, I think I first wanted to write a very in-depth and detailed kind of encyclopedia of Black women in pop music. It's very important to me. I really feel like the creative lives of Black women are just not even not celebrated enough, but not even written about enough or talked about enough. So that was my goal. But then, you know, I'm blessed to have a wonderful editor in Chris Jackson at One World Penguin Random House, and Chris, who I worked with on two previous books of fiction. This is my first long form nonfiction. He said, I think you should tell your story. You are a Black woman in pop music. That was so powerful to me. I'm grateful to him for saying that. I'm not going to act like I didn't fight him on it. But when I finally got down to business, a project that had been taking me forever to finished up quite quickly.
That's it. What did that tell you?
That it was time for me to reclaim my own story, to tell my own story of being a Black girl from Oakland, California, from Los Angeles, California, who grew up to become the editor-in-chief of Vibe, editor of Billboard, host of Black Girl Songbook, just an all-around great chick, you know what I mean? And it was time to tell that story.
When people get your book, it's interesting because as you start, they think, okay, she's going to launch right into the, you know, girl groups or something like that. But the first Black woman writer we meet is Phyllis Wheatley. You know, the 17th century poet, Phyllis Wheatley is how open your book. Why did you want to begin with her?
Well, you know, I could say for a billion reasons, but the main ones being, we don't talk about Phyllis Wheatley enough. She's a pre-revolutionary poet, the first Black person to publish a volume of poetry in the United States of America when it was really 13 colonies at that time. Her life, I mean, she was kidnapped, you know, from Africa as a seven-year-old. She came over on a slave ship, and all these things are, the book is deeply researched. And, you know, you can find records of who came over on what slave ship. And so she was 7 years old. And I always have a picture in my head of her standing on a pier as she was described, only covered by a piece of carpet. It haunts me. It haunts me. And then she grew up to become this fabulous poet. But the thing is, she performed her poems. and she sang them. So to me, she is our very first pop star.
My guest, Daniel Smith. The name of the book is Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop. It's coming out on April 19th. Let's dive in. There's a chapter in the book dedicated to the Dixie Cups.
Yes.
And you were able to speak to members
yes.
of the Dixie Cup, particularly. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that conversation, why that was an important conversation to have.
You know, it's really sad. It makes me a little bit emotional because I spoke to Barbara Jean and then also Rosalie Hawkins. And Rosalie passed. It's about 2 months ago. Oh. I wish I'd gotten done just a little bit sooner so that she was here to read what I wrote about her, because she very much believed in the book. She very much believed that their story had not been told mm-hmm. and that the stories of so many Black women in pop had not been told. But she just talked about, you know, growing up in New Orleans in segregated times and coming out of that to have a number one pop hit too. Really, no, one, she had Going to the Chapel, which is one of my all-time favorite songs, one of my mother's favorite songs. And then also Iko Iko, which is a huge hit. You can hear it in Mission Impossible 2 even. So, but just to talk to, you know, we forget that segregated times weren't so long ago. And just to, I felt obtuse asking her questions mm-hmm. about sitting at the back of the bus and things like that. But, you know, we don't often hear the details of those moments. We hear, you know, it's like, and Black people used to have to sit at the back of the bus. Yeah, but what was that like? How was that enforced? Mm-hmm. Who said what to who? And she talked to me about that so much, in addition to talking about, you know, singing and being just like a joyful teenage girl. But she talked to me about that segregation piece of it, too. And man, it breaks your heart anew.
Yeah, I tell you, know, my parents went to segregated schools and I'm not a dinosaur. Not yet, anyway.
Right.
You know, and I think about that a lot.
Yes. It's shocking. And the thing is, people say, you know, what is R&B? Well, R&B is rhythm and blues. But the blues come from blues, like sadness, depression, trauma. These are real things that inform the wonderful music that we love. But the blues of Black people particularly, and really of so many marginalized communities, but the specific blues of Black people in R&B, I mean, I think it has to be talked about like that. Things are named things for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's R&B.
Let's circle back to Iko Iko, because there's controversy around the song, about who really wrote it. What did the members tell you about what happened, and what is revealing about that story?
I mean, it's a convoluted situation, without question. I don't know, honestly, that the song belongs to anyone. It's a chant. It comes out of, you know, Native American folkloric tradition, African folkloric tradition, out of New Orleans folkloric tradition. It was like a patty cake type of song. But all that being said, the Dixie Cups vocally arranged it for what they recorded with some help from some other people. But then a whole other person, their manager, tried to take credit for it. Oh man, it just, like, I'm always complaining that Black women in pop don't receive the credit they are due, like, you know, what people say about them and how they are or are not uplifted in the culture. But also Black women in music need to get the money they are due, the payment, the mean green, mm-hmm. like, it's not fair. At that time, you know, music and publishing rights and those credits that you see on CDs and albums, those are actually like, who gets the money credits? Mm-hmm. That's what those are. Not just to say she did it or he did it, but she gets this money. And so that's why it's also so important for Black women in music to receive the credit we are due, so that we can also get the money, the payment, the annuity building wealth that money can provide.
Let's listen to
I should say that music can provide.
Let's take a listen to Iko Iko from the Dixie Cups. And I'll follow up with a question after.
My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about here now, here now, here now. I
Waiko Ande, Giacomo Fino Anale, Giacomo Finale. Look at my king all dressed in red, Aiko Aiko Ande. I bet you $5 he'll kill you dead, Giacomo Finale. Talking about him now, him now, him now.
What made the Dixie Cups unique, Danielle?
Sublime voices, mm-hmm. joined in sisterhood and cousinhood. Similar, if not identical, backgrounds. Ambition, a mother who wanted a lot from them. Commitment to excellence. Mm-hmm. Understanding pop music before you're even able to say, I understand what pop music is doing and I want to try to emulate that. Even if you don't have the words to articulate that, it doesn't mean that you don't know how to do it. And they did. And going to the chapel is a perfect example of them hearing what they were hearing on the radio, realizing that they had to kind of sound like that to have that kind of success, and doing it perfectly while still holding on to all of the soul and the rhythm and the blues of their life.
You dedicate a chapter to three women who are related: opera singer Leontine Price, Dionne Warwick, and Cissy Houston, the mother of Whitney Houston. I want to talk about Leontine Price first.
Okay.
What did the opera world look like when Leontine Price entered it?
Oh, it was very white. I mean, it remains so, mm-hmm. but it was even more so then. She's a first in many places in opera. She's a second in many places in opera, but she is a first in many, like, she's the most famous that we have from that time. Her personality is so sweeping. Her energy is so royal, like, and her voice is like, you know, I'm not an opera fan, far from an opera buff. But if you hear Leontine, man, I don't even understand the languages that she's singing in. And I don't care, because you don't even need to understand. And I can't believe I'm saying this about opera, because I never believed it when other people said it. Mm-hmm. But it's the emotion of the song that you get caught up in. You kind of know from maybe a translation of the title, you know, where we're going, somebody died or somebody's leaving or somebody's come home. I don't know, but it's like, you feel it. And Leontine brings the blues of the Mississippi Delta to opera. And it's like, yo, I could listen to this all day.
Let's listen to a little bit of Leontine Price live from 1985 at the Met, singing from Aida. Leontine Price. All right, so somebody's sitting here thinking, wait, we were talking about black women in pop. So can you, for our audience, draw the through line from Leontine Price to her relative, Whitney Houston?
Oh, well, that's not hard. I mean, first of all, in the 1950s in the United States of America, opera was a pop phenomenon. You know, middle-class white Americans particularly loved it. People were in opera glasses, you know what I mean? Opera-length dresses, opera-length gloves. Mm-hmm. And then you think about Leontine, whose cousin is Dionne Warwick. Dionne says that when it's in Shine Bright, Dionne says to her, when she would see her cousin all the time, hey, cuz, And people would say, that's your cousin. And Dion's like, you didn't know? Like, of course, that's my cousin. And then Dion is related to Sissy Houston, the mother of Whitney Houston. But Sissy Houston on her own, you know, is one of the most influential Black women in the history of music, really, in America, because she's contributed background vocals and vocal arrangements to groups from Elvis to Van Morrison to, I mean, it just Aretha Franklin. It goes on and on and on and on. And also just because she trained, Sissy Houston didn't just give birth to Whitney Houston and raise her as a as a daughter, but also trained her vocally from a very little girl. And if you are the person who trained Whitney Houston, who really is more important than you, than Whitney? Like, and that goes like, and they're all related. Their name is, it's the Drinkard family line. They are a dynasty. And if they were a group of white men, maybe even white women, they would be talked about as such. It's like, I feel like it comes down to like fun facts about that with people. People say, oh my God, did you know that Leontine Price was related to Dionne Warwick? Ooh, fun fact. Whereas if they were white and male, there would be books on books on books dedicated to this Drinkard family line.
It's interesting you should bring up the, you know, the idea of the respect that is due or the lack of respect that is given. And you write about Dionne Warwick that she spent a good time, quote, in the dungeon of ridicule.
Oof.
And I think it's so interesting that she has become so famous to a new generation through her tweets and through the way she just lays it out, which I, which she reminds me, you know, of, you probably have relatives like this too, that just say it. They say what is everybody else is thinking.
I always say there's not that much great about getting older, but one of the things that is great about getting older is that you just don't care. You're going to say what's on your mind. It's lovely. I get closer and closer. Like I'm about 60% there right now, but wait till I'm 80%, 90%. That book is going to be amazing, right? That book is going to be, woo. But Dionne, man, is so disrespectful the way she was treated in the 80s.
Her voice is tremendous. She's got...
God, they used to drag her. I remember watching like all the late night talk shows. Which I've really never liked, but they were so important in the 80s to culture. Like the next morning would be all about what those hosts had said the night before. They were so popular and powerful, you know, and they would come out in these monologues and just drag Dionne Warwick. This woman who has sold more records than darn near everybody. This woman who influenced a generation upon generation of singers, this woman who became a pop star in the segregated times of music when radio stations were more segregated, record stores were segregated, arenas and nightclubs and ballrooms where people played were segregated. And Dionne made her way up from the gospel roots to becoming like the Alfie, the do you know the way to San Jose legend that she is. Like, come on, it was rude, man. It was beyond rude. I thought it was hateful.
My guest, Danielle Smith, the name of her forthcoming book is Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop. It's due out on April 19th. We'll have more with Danielle. We'll discuss the word diva after the break. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Danielle Smith. Her new book is called Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop, due out in April. So let's talk about this word diva. The word diva, it can be a compliment. It can be used as a pejorative term. Beyonce takes it back and says diva is a female name of a hustler. Am I quoting that right, I think?
Yes, pretty close.
I was really close. What do you think of the word in the context of music history and then in the context of the story and the point and the goal of your book?
I mean, just when you look at the language of the word diva, I mean, it was really just more of a, it wasn't meant to be an honorific. It was meant more to be a label. Like, that is the diva of our company. She is the, and it comes from opera, to go back to opera, right? So that's the diva of our company. Like, really no like good or bad attached to it. She is the first lady of our company. She sings the lead parts. That is what it meant at the beginning. But because we're women, it began to be perceived as negative. Because if you're the first lady of the opera, let me tell you, you want your dressing room to be right. You need your corset. You need that tied up just so. Your hair needs to be right. The temperature in the room needs to be right so you can feel good and go out and give it, you know what I mean, the best performance that you can give. So then when you start attaching it to women like Cher, it's called Cher a diva, Jennifer Lopez a diva. Any woman that is super successful all of a sudden gets diva attached to them, like they're so extra, you know, they just got to have this or got to have that. It's like, yes, they do. And if they do, so what? They attach it to Beyonce. They attach it to any woman, Diana Ross. They attach it to any woman who is very clear about what she needs and wants and how she wants her show to go and how she wants to look and how she wants her life to go. And so people say it with a sneer. Well, she's a diva. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so wonderful that Beyonce did take that back and say a diva is a female version of a hustler. Because in these times, and really in the times before, that is true.
I want to ask you about Stephanie Mills. I'm so glad that you mentioned Stephanie Mills in the book. And you write, and this is the personal part of the story, that theater was an escape for you in school and, you know, that included there was abuse in the home.
Yes.
And you love The Wiz. Ooh. And you write of Stephanie Mills. Stephanie Mills is one of the most beloved and one of the most underrated Black female recording artists in history. Also happens to be a native New Yorker.
Hey.
Why?
Brooklyn.
Why do you think Stephanie Mills did not get her flowers at the time?
You know, it's ugly why she didn't. But she's been clear about it. Stephanie's a chocolate sister. Mm-hmm. You know, there was such a fascination, and really there always has been, with, you know, Black women who are maybe tall, Black women who are, you know, curly of hair, wispy of waist. And, you know, Stephanie wasn't giving you all of that. She was just giving you the biggest and the baddest and the boldest voice of the 1970s and 1980s. I mean, she, you know, The Wiz itself was a pop phenomenon. And Stephanie Mills is at the center of that. And I do talk about her so much because that original Broadway production and the recording of that play, which lasted forever and toured the United States and toured Japan, Stephanie's voice, you can just jump into it, get lost in it. The duet she does with the lion character, you know, is just, it's too much. And then her own big pop songs, her own big R&B songs, What You Gonna Do With My Lovin', and all those great records. Like, Stephanie, you know, and she remains, you know, she has a rabid fan base, rabid. She still performs and tours, and she says, I don't feel unsung. I don't feel under-celebrated. But I like to say sometimes if you're not mad, you need your sister to get mad for you. And so I am mad for her.
Let's play I Love a Song. This is my childhood. Let's play Home from The Wiz.
To me, the love that we lost inside.
Yeah, I can't deny that. That's Stephanie Mills. Cannot deny that.
Come on. Like, come on. Like, and she's saying that, what, eight shows a week. She's saying that 8 shows a week. Like, come on, Stephanie.
I want to get your take on Janet Jackson at the moment. And we're having, you know, this series of, it's been happening a lot lately. People have been going back and thinking about the way women were covered, women in pop music were covered, women in pop culture, from Monica Lewinsky to Britney Spears to Janet Jackson. The whole Super Bowl thing has been thought about in a new light, the Justin Timberlake issue. And this is a new docuseries, obviously, on Lifetime about Janet Jackson, which she's fully involved in. So you have to take it with that.
Yes.
What is the thing you think people get wrong about Janet Jackson?
Well, I think the first thing that people get wrong about Janet Jackson is that she sold probably way more records than you think she has. Mm-hmm. I think another thing people get wrong about Janet Jackson is how difficult and how hard it must have been for her to decide that at the height of her brother's career to go into the exact same business and compete against him and become the person that she became. She did not sit in the shadow of her brother at all. She got out there and did the damn thing, like whether it was singing, whether it was dancing, whether it was touring, whether it was album sales, whether it was impact on culture, whether it was being a style icon, whatever it was, Janet won at it. I think there's an idea sometimes when we think about women after they get out of, let's say, the full flush of their 20s and 30s, is that they're somehow quaint or something. Mm-hmm. I think that Black women's accomplishments are strategically dis or misremembered. And in the case of Janet, I think that's wildly true. I think sometimes I look at the tweets and I stay on them too much. You know, there's this idea that she's powerful and that she's great, but she's also kind of like cute and everyone's inspiration and okay. But really, she's one of the most successful pop stars in the history of recorded music. Like, that needs to be said often and loud.
Our next segment, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about women in hip hop. And when you think about the leading women in hip hop, they're also huge pop stars. You know, Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion. Mm-hmm. How do you think about that relationship between hip hop and pop when it comes to Black women?
Oh, that's a tough road. Mm-hmm. It's a tough road. Just if you even take one person, let's just take Cardi. Let's just take, like, growing up in, you know, circumstances without money. She's talked about growing up in low-income housing, so you're already associated, like, with the word low, right? You're working in the strip club. That's hard work, man. In her first mm-hmm. song, she talks about bloody shoes. That's what she calls her Christian Louboutin pumps. That's so poetic to me and functions on so many levels. And then, you know, she fights and fights. She goes through the reality show situation. She finally gets some money. She gets her teeth fixed. She gets her boobs done. She's open about all of it. And still people want to act like, is she real, though? It's like, is she a real hip hop star? Like, is she this? Is she that? And it's like, that's like gaslighting by millions of people. They did the same thing to, you know, that I'm talking about hip hop, but the same thing with like Donna Summer and disco. It's like, are you real? What must it feel like to pour your emotions and your work ethic into your projects? And what people want to know off the rip is, but are you real? Mm-hmm. You don't sound real. It's awful. And that doesn't, and I'm not even talking about the road, like the gauntlet that Black women in hip hop and Black women in music, period, have to walk, you know, of sexism and racism and just people not considering them for jobs outside of just being on the stage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like it's ugly. The only beauty that comes out of it is frankly us, is black women getting through it. But I just would like it to not be as difficult. Why must we arrive everywhere tired and sweaty? Why can't we arrive at the top, you know what I mean, with our hair blowing in the wind and like, and taking a deep breath and having a glass of champagne and offering, you know, love to everyone? Why must we arrive heaving? And that's what I want to come to a stop.
The name of the book is Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop. It'll be out on April 19th. My guest has been Danielle Smith. Danielle, thank you so much for giving us so much time.
Thank you so much. Had a great time, and we'll see you again soon.
I'm going out on Beyonce, just because.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.